Welcome to Spotlight on Africa with me, Daniel Finnan. This week, we'll be hearing about Anglophone Cameroon. The crisis in the northwest and southwest regions of the country has worsened over recent months. Separatist groups have stepped up attacks against Cameroonian security forces. This comes following a crackdown on Anglophones who had originally taken to the streets in protest back at the end of 2016. Anglophones are unhappy with perceived marginalization by the Francophone majority. And more recently, separatist groups have declared independence, calling themselves Ambazonia. We speak to a man who was detained for 8 months by the Cameroonian authorities for his role in organizing protests. He's the president of the FACO Lawyers Association, a grouping of lawyers in the southwest region, and also the vice president for Central Africa at the African Bar Association.
Welcome to Nkongo Felix Agbor-Bala. What's the latest on the jailed Anglophone leaders, those who were transferred from Nigeria?
The latest is that there's no latest, in the sense that we don't have any information. Nobody has seen them. Nobody has spoken to them. Their lawyers and their family, nobody that I know. I have been there with a couple of lawyers twice, and we were not allowed to see them.
Aside from those who were transferred from Nigeria, do you know how many Anglophones in total are currently in custody?
There are close to 1,000 that are in custody between two maximum prisons in Yaoundé, Kondengi Principal, where I spent 8 months, and there is a Kondengi Central, where BBC Manchu and Penterence and the others are. There are also some detained at the SET, the Gendarmerie Headquarters in Yaoundé. Some were also supposed to be at the Judicial Police at Elixono. Then there are close to 409 at the Central Prison in Boya, others in Bamenda, and scattered all over the country. I mean, these are those, we can identify. Some of them have already been convicted. Penterence was given 12 years. Others had 11. Mancho BBC and T. Comrade were found guilty on terrorism, secession, and group rebellion. So the matter has been adjourned on the 8th for the sentencing.
Why do you think you were released from jail last year?
Yeah, to be sincere and honest with you, we don't really know. I don't know what was the reason that they used on deciding to release myself, Dr. Fontaine, Justice Aya, and 51 others.
Do you support the violence carried out by some separatist groups? They say they're defending the people against crimes carried out by the Cameroonian security forces.
It's a very tricky one. You know, I believe in self-defense. I believe in the right for people to protect themselves, protect their people. I think it's a fundamental right, that the right to self-defense. But I don't agree when you go beyond self-defense. You know, when you start doing things which are out of the law, then that is where I have a problem with. I think the whole thing about self-defense also stems from the fact that most of the people I've spoken to who believe in an armed struggle, their argument is that the government arrest people because they cannot protect themselves. They just kidnap some of them, take them to Yaoundé, try them. So they are trying to protect the people. So it's a tricky balance between self-defense and committing offenses also.
The violence is quite close to home for you. In fact, your family house in Mamfe was attacked. How did this make you feel?
I felt a bit sad and a bit disappointed, because I believe that for most of my adulthood, I have in one way or the other contributed or fought for our people. I've been involved. The struggle did not start in 2016. Probably it's just that I came to the limelight in the struggle in 2016. But I have been in the struggle from the days of the All Anglophone Conference when I was a young boy. So for me, then go to jail, my dad was buried in my absence, then to see that what happened. But it's not the majority of the people. So that's why I don't get so very dejected, because I still believe that In any struggle, you have people who disagree with you. You have people who not think like you. But I caution violence, and I am urging all the group in that we can still disagree without being disagreeable. If we have a common goal to fight to protect the self-determination of our people, we need to understand that not everybody will think alike.
You talked about diverging views there. Well, the Anglophone movement has somewhat splintered into a number of different groups. Is it important at all to reconcile this?
It's very important for us. It's true that it's not easy to speak with one voice, but I think it's very important for us as a people to try as much as possible not to be seen the perception that we are fighting each other. There are times when the leaders or the other groupings and their followers, they spend a lot of time criticizing and attacking each other rather than focusing on the target, which is the self-determination of the people. If I had my way, I would advise, I would urge, I would organize, I mean, with the other leaders, let them sit down and have an Anglophone leadership forum, you know, where the leaders can sit and dialogue and try to agree on the things that all of them have a common interest.
Was the self-declaration of independence for Ambazonia a bad idea?
For the time that it was done, I think it was precipitated. Enough groundwork had not been done for the declaration. But, well, I wasn't involved, so perhaps they had more information. Perhaps they had information that I did not have.
You're saying it was a bad idea?
No, I would not say it was a bad or a good idea, because I don't have the facts that they have. I don't know the background that which they decided to declare independence, you know, but the situation on the ground, declaring independence, does it change anything? You know, how can we effectively, if you have independence, how can you effectively protect it? How can you effectively live as an independent state? What are the recognitions you have from other states, you know? So it's not just about declaring of independence.
What role have France and the UK played since the start of the crisis?
Well, I think they're doing behind-the-scenes diplomacy. Met a couple of diplomats from, officially or non-officially, from both the French and the British. I personally think that they could do a lot. They could do more. They could engage. I mean, not only engaging government, engaging both parties to try to see how they can find a solution, how we can get a truce from what is going on, and also to address the problems that the Anglophones have been raising. It's very important for us to look at these problems and try to find a long-lasting solution. The British and the French, and they should know better, because this problem also, they are connected to the problems. In a way, they are responsible for what is happening. So they cannot just claim that, well, it's an independent state, we cannot intervene. No. When do you want to intervene? You want to intervene when there's a peacekeeping mission? I don't think it's proper. I think now, yes, they are doing something which I appreciate, but I think that they can do more, and I urge them to engage the government, you know, to engage the other groupings also in trying to see how we can find a solution, because the current situation on the ground is not helpful for anybody. It's not helpful for the country. It's not helpful for the citizens. So the earlier we find a solution where we can live in peace and harmony as we used to live prior to the uprising, but now genuine peace, genuine justice, you know, genuine harmony, not a situation where one group of persons feel they are second class. In a society that there is equality, that there is fairness for each and everyone, no matter what part of the country you come from, I think it will be better.
Could change for Anglophones come about through the ballot box, do you think, with the forthcoming elections?
The divergent school of thoughts. Some believe that an election could help the situation. It is difficult to defeat the current leadership. Because of everything they have, they created the ELECAM, the Constitutional Council, everything. They have the money, they have the resources. The elections can never be free and fair, you know. I mean, unless electioneering is an entire process, not just voting. It starts with the entire process from registration, access to media, campaign financing, and everything, not just the voting. I don't think that they will be able to defeat the current head of state. I wish that there was a possibility that those who are vying for the highest office could come together and have a veritable candidate, you know, so that they can give the ruling party a run for its money. But when you talk to most of them, you don't have the feeling that they would come together.
So the elections for you are irrelevant?
I think they will not help the situation. Going for an election when a part of the country is having this kind of armed conflict, you know, because there's a war. There's a war from an armed conflict going on in the southwest and the northwest regions. I don't think it's the best solution for now. I think we should try to see how we can find a solution to address these issues, because the elections will not solve the problem. And this problem has been created by the current government. I don't think he has the capacity and capability to solve the problem. So him being in power, this problem will not be solved. I think the problem will be solved when he leaves power.
Thank you for joining us on RFI, and Nkonko Felix Agbor-Bala.
Well, that's it for this week's Spotlight on Africa. From me, Daniel Finnan, thanks for listening.